Hi, and welcome to another edition of Leading and Growing Your Real Estate Business. Coach James Shorty, aka Shorty, and welcome to another edition. If you haven't already, please press that subscribe button so you get the latest episodes straight into your inbox. And we are super excited to have a marvelous guest, a seasoned investor, an expert in the industry, Kate Bakos. Check her out, katebakos.com.au. Kate Bakos Property. Oh, we're excited. Kate completed a degree with honors in chemistry at Monash in 1996 and held a passion for property long before her career in science, winning 2018's number one National Buyer's Agent of the Year award, marked as a high watermark for Kate. Purchasing her first property at 21, Kate continued to invest in property whilst developing her career in sales and marketing with Orica. In 2003, Kate won a marketing and bursary award. However, her passion for real estate saw her make the decision to move into the property industry as a sales agent in Melbourne's Bayside. Qualifying and working as a mortgage broker after the birth of her daughter and throughout the GFC. That would have been interesting, the GFC as a mortgage broker. I'm looking forward to hearing more about that. Came one of the most valuable apprenticeships she could have served. Her appreciation of lending policy, loan restrictions, borrowing capacity, calculation, and cash flow analysis is what sets her apart from her competitors. Kate's role as co-director of the large Melbourne firm in 2011 was instrumental in introducing their buyer's agency arm, where she guided her clients through their various property journeys until she left in 2014 to launch Kate Bakos Property, a boutique and independent Melbourne buyer's agency firm. Kate's extensive asset selection experience, not only in Melbourne metro suburbs, but also in Victoria regional markets, including Ballarat and Geelong, has given her a valuable point of difference to offer her cash flow driven clients. Looking forward to finding out what's happening in regional Victoria down there as well. Kate has assisted over 2,000 clients with their property purchases, strategies, and decisions over time. She's a regular commentator in the media and contributes weekly to newspapers, live television, podcasts, and publications, including Domain, Australian Financial Review, The Australian, Your Investment Property, Herald Sun, Fox Business, Smart Property, and Commercial Television. Whoa, we've got an icon on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. Kate shares her knowledge and experience regularly at seminars, volunteers her bidding skills often, and enjoys mentoring young people in the industry she loves. In addition to YIP Magazine Buyers Agents of the Year in 2018, Kate was a finalist in both 2019 and 13 for the Telstra Businesswoman of the Year, the national winner of the Buyers Agent of the Year Sterling Publishing 2013, and currently a finalist for REB National Thought Leaders in 2023. She's held the position of president for the Real Estate Buyers Agents Association, the national body, for 4 years from 19 to 23, and a proud PIPA member with the Qualified Property Investment Advisor status. Kate is a co-host in the podcast series of The Property Trio. Go and check it out. It's so cool. Alongside her industry friends, Dave Johnson and Peter Koulizos. The trio bring regular property topics to light for their listeners, and they enjoy separating facts from fiction. On a personal level, Kate has continued to build a sizable property portfolio alongside her husband, and the pair have the vast experience of renovating and adding value. Kate's book, Successful Property Investment, was published in 2016 and features 48 real-life ventures for readers to digest and glean tips from. Kate has another work in progress and is focused this time on assisting investors and recognizing the right particular strategy for their own particular scenario. Kate enjoys her spare time, especially Sundays, with her husband and daughter in Yarrowvilles Village, and is a supporter of a Melbourne's Inner West community. Wow, so excited to have you. Thank you so much, Kate. Let's get into it.
Let's indeed. Quite a handful, that bio. I'm sorry about that.
I love it. No, because that shares a story, right? That shares a story of your journey, which is so many different snippets that we could just unpack there. But going from obviously going from where you were in Orica, then moving into mortgage broking, and then moving into sales, what made you want to transition into getting stuck into the property industry?
Fair question. I was a pretty passionate investor, and I was really loving, you know, analyzing markets and getting a good grip on all of the different types of property and different locations and performances that an investor can enjoy. And as you read, I had a science background, so I was working in the lab and probably should have been paying more attention to, you know, what I was creating inside the lab versus, you know, out there in my portfolio. But I remember my professor just saying to me, "You've really got to make a choice here," and it was a pretty easy choice. So getting a little bit of work under my belt with Orica was great. It was a wonderful organisation, but I just really enjoyed property and knew that I needed to get closer to it, and probably had to get over my nerves at the time. I was a pretty shy young person, and you need to be a bit more outgoing and, you know, have a tougher skin for property. So jumping into sales, that was, you know, a baptism of fire, and it was great. And I learned a lot and I really enjoyed it. But as a listing agent, I felt like it was a bit one-dimensional. You meet the vendors, you list their property, you meet buyers, you find a buyer for a property, you're not really picking the property. And that was the part that I enjoyed. So I knew that there was something, you know, more analytical and more consultative out there for me. And mortgage broking was a pathway I thought would be, you know, something for me to consider. And as much as I enjoyed elements of it, I didn't love it all. And you don't really have an influence on property selection as a mortgage broker, but you certainly learn a lot behind the scenes about lending policy and cash flow forecasting, and, you know, certainly what banks don't like. That was a big one for me, because getting a pre-approval is not enough. It's not a guarantee that you'll be okay to finance a property. You've got to pick the right property as well.
I love that. What I'm picking up, Kate, is a more around building those relationships. So obviously sales, as you mentioned, it's like you've got a campaign, you run a campaign, you know, you
Yeah.
work with the vendor, you're working with the buyers, and then it's like, okay, good, next one, right? Then when you get to mortgage broking, it's a bit of a long relationship. You might come
Yeah.
around, might do some refinancing, might do the next investment. But when we go into buyer's advocate, you've actually it's a longer relationship that you're working with the client. So is that fair to say you're really loving that relationship piece
Yeah.
when you're working with clients? Would that be a
I
fair
do.
call?
I absolutely love the relationship. I also love the fact that there's no one size fits all. Everybody's situation is so unique. And so you've got to be, you're really on your game with working through the numbers and seeing what sort of forward planning they're looking at. And if they're not looking at forward planning, getting them talking about it, because it's not just about buying a great property today. It's, well, why are you doing this? And how long do you want to be working in the capacity that you're working now? When do you want to slow down? How much do you want to retire on? How many properties do we need? They're the conversations I have.
Yeah, I love that. And so what have you noticed with, you know, with working with clients over the years? What's the big changes that you've seen, say over the last 5, 10 years with everything that's going on at the moment?
Buyer's agency has become better known. There are more of us, and, you know, there are some strong messages out there from all kinds of buyer's agency brands. And in particular, we've seen a proliferation of buyer's agent activity on TV. So people understand it better. So I've seen a higher a take up. I've also seen, you know, it's transitioned from being for the wealthy or for the overseas, you know, expat buyers to, I've got first home buyers now that are leaning on me. So a broader array of buyers. And I think that people aren't scared to have the conversation about what sort of role they can play in the search as well. It's not just a case of give me the brief and I'll come back to you when I found the property. It's a journey and an education for a lot of people. So that's what I've really enjoyed.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And where do you see it going? Like, you know, with the technology, with all these different things, you know, as you said, like it's opening up a broader spectrum for first home owners to overseas to all these different elements and people leaning on you. Where do you see
Yes.
it over the next, say, it's a couple of years to 5, 10 years? What's that journey look like, do you think?
Well, I think most people will consider this question and talk about AI, which is the right answer. AI can only take you so far, though. So we've got some incredible algorithms, but we've got some that lead you astray as well. And the thing about transacting in property is, once you get to the pointy end and you're negotiating, there's no amount of AI that can help you do that, because you're dealing with an agent's personality, you're dealing with a vendor's personality, and then you're dealing with the other buyers if you've got competing buyer personalities, and all of those nuances cannot be captured by a machine. You need to be a great negotiator and really have an eye on the prize and understand what sort of questions you need to be asking and what things you're observing to see where that deal's going. And that's the critical part that a good BA plays when it comes to the tactical side of things. And no machine learning or AI outcome can influence that, in my view. You can certainly pick hot spots or overlay criteria and have a look at metrics, but your data is as good as what's been input. And I think a lot of people get carried away with that. They look at AI outcomes and algorithms and they pick areas, but we've got to look at how well that data is collected and how recently it was collected. We've got data lag, we've got census dates every 5 years. Sometimes we've got a gaping hole with data and it requires getting into the coalface and working it out for yourself.
So true. I was at a conference just last week and looking at that at exactly the same point, one of the speakers was mentioning that at the end of the day, you still need someone to when you get to that point in, to have those negotiations, have those courageous conversations to mm-hmm. work in the best interests of your clients. You know, obviously, you know, like you're in Victoria. Tell us about what's happening down there at the moment. Like I'm up north, I'm in Northern Rivers, I'm near Byron Bay. But what's happening down where you are and what's happening around regional parts? I'm super interested to find out.
Yeah, Victoria's had such a roller coaster over the last few years. And as you'll know, when we went into lockdown, we copped it pretty hard. And that was off the back of a rush after the 2019 election that was a bit of a surprise result. So we've had these, you know, booms and busts and it was really heady. The lockdowns were tough, but we had a massive property run, particularly in the regions. We had a lot of Melburnians make that tree change or sea change decision and leave. And then when things returned, we had a lot come back, but it wasn't a basic elastic response because the types of properties that they left and then the types of properties that they came back to were quite different. So for a period there, we had smaller properties like apartments in inner city living top of the pops because people were wanting to retain their coastal property and return to work and use their city pad for a couple of nights. So COVID created so much change in our market. Then unfortunately, everyone's probably been reading about our legislative changes. We've had some pretty onerous rental reforms, and then we've had the land tax, temporary tax, which, you know, made headlines. And it's for a lot of people, it's been the last straw. And I think the reality when it comes to investors making the decision to sell, and we're seeing a lot of investors selling at the moment, it's fair to say that the biggest burden is the increased interest rate burden, because you wouldn't walk away from a good investment property for a small component of land tax. You will walk away from an investment property when you can't afford to hold it or when you feel like you've lost control of it. So I think, you know, in a trifecta sense, those three things have all played a pretty negative role in investor activity here. But if we have a look at the numbers, the investor take up at the moment has been quite strong. So you can see nationally investor numbers are up, and that's not because of interest rates or lending policy or anything like that. Investors have clearly decided that it's an opportune time. Melbourne hasn't necessarily been the beneficiary of all of that investor activity. Although I have had quite a few investors, I've had significantly more owner occupiers than normal. So my blend has been a reflection of that. And the investors that I've been working with have been interstate and overseas. And interestingly, if you look at the disparity between our median house prices, you know, Sydney versus Melbourne is a really common ratio that's considered. It's at its widest that it's been in a long, long time, like well over a decade. So we're seeing investors spotting value and voting with their feet. I think that's probably the fairest Melbourne snapshot I could give a staggering kind of way, but they couldn't keep doing what they were doing through 2021. We had, you know, over 20% growth in some parts of Victoria. So they've come off enough for people to say, okay, it's off the boil. It's not crazy like it was. Let's get involved. And of course, rents have gone up. Rents have gone up significantly in Victoria. We've had the highest climb for combined units and houses other than circling in on Perth. We've certainly seen a change in that regard. And that's mostly because our supply and demand Well, it's only because our supply and demand for rentals has been tipped on its head. We haven't got enough supply. We've got quite strong demand.
Yeah, so true, so true. I mean, we're noticing up in the, Byron Bay region is across the papers when it was crazy through COVID. Everyone wanted to move out. It's like in regional in Victoria, and what we're noticing up here is that people have a different perception now of what it takes to look after a 5-acre block, all the work and all that. So we're seeing a fair few come back onto the market because we're moving back to Sydney or Melbourne now. So it's an interesting journey that's taken place. Where do you see and then so obviously crystal ball, where do you see then it happening this year for Victoria and the regional market and obviously looking at your different mix that the type of clients that you're working with, what do you see as a projection throughout this year?
I don't think we're going to have a runaway year in Melbourne or Victoria for that matter, but I don't think it will be doom and gloom either. I think we'll do better than last year. And the uptake from Melburnians moving to Geelong has been something I've been paying attention to for many years. And that's still going strong. Though anecdotally, I get to talk to a lot of agents and I get to work with buyers that are making that permanent move. It's been a city that's transformed very rapidly, and COVID really jetted them along. And Ballarat, the same could be said for Ballarat, but because of the distance from Melbourne, Geelong has certainly been a popular choice. And if you're looking at the outskirts of Melbourne, the newer states, Geelong's actually closer.
Yeah,
So a lot of
fantastic.
people are saying, well, I could pick an established city. We've got pretty good transport links. We've got some very beautiful housing around Geelong. You can get quite close to the city for a comparatively low budget. Education and health is excellent, and we've had an increase in jobs in quite a few sectors, including health and education. So there's work there. The commute's not that intolerable, and it's a pretty city, and it's really changing. So my prediction is that Geelong will continue to thrive, and I think that we'll have a slow and steady year, not a disastrous year, but I think the legislative changes need to either be bedded down and accepted, or potentially repealed. Wouldn't shock me if they were repealed, but nothing surprises me with the Victorian state government these days.
Very true, very true. Yeah, interesting predictions over the year. Now, being a busy mum, being a busy business owner, and juggling all the different hats, how do you manage your own time? What are some of the things that you do to try and fit everything in? Obviously, because there's a lot going on in your world. How do you do your time management?
Well, I outsource the stuff that I don't like that I'm not good at. So house cleaning, that kind of stuff. You try and be present, and try is a horrible word when you're saying that you want to be present for your loved ones, but I have to work really hard at that because sometimes I've got the phone on in my pocket because I've got a deal going and I know that it'll go off and I need to step outside at any time. So I try very hard to be present and enjoy that downtime with family and friends. I like photography. I'm into music. So, those things on the side that are a complete change from property, they fill my cup.
I was just about to lead into that about filling your cup and working on you. So music and photography. And so how do you then, and how do you incorporate that into your day or your week? What's the so kind of the strategies that you do to ensure that that cup is filled?
Build. I take Friday afternoons off, and
Beautiful.
I try very hard to consistently take them off. So 1 o'clock, I close the door, I'm out of here. And on Sunday, unless I've got a deal going, which is, well, I won't say highly unlikely, but it's reasonably unlikely that I'll have a deal, I can enjoy Sunday. And at any opportunity, if I've got a slow auction week, I haven't got anything on a Saturday, I'll make the most of that. We'll go away, and I don't need to go far to feel like I'm on holiday. A trip to Ballarat will do me, as long as I can, sit back and not think about work and maybe take some photos or discover a nice new place to dine or whatever. It's just the little things. You smell the roses.
So true. I love that. Really appreciate the feedback there and the thoughts and the strategies. So on the show, we have a 60-second quiz to find out a little bit more about our guests. Are you willing to play?
Yeah, of course. Let's give it a go.
Let's go. Let's go. All right. Favorite movie?
Shawshank Redemption.
Ooh, nice one. Favorite food?
Mexican.
Ooh, in particular, favorite dish? I was going to go one step further.
Ooh, burrito bowl.
Ooh, I love it. All
Yeah.
right, cool. Favorite holiday destination?
Oh, anywhere. Absolutely anywhere. But let's say Vietnam.
Nice, nice. Do you have a morning routine?
Not really. I wish I could say, yeah, I get on the treadmill or I get up early or I go for a walk. No, I get in here and I put the kettle on and have a cup of tea and try and get a few things done before the phones start ringing. I'm an early bird.
Nice. Do you have an evening routine at all?
No, not really. So if I've got work to do, sadly, I'll be, sitting on the couch next to my husband. He's watching something that I'm not interested in. I'm finishing a blog or whatever, but no. I take the evenings how they come.
Cool. And do you have a most embarrassing moment?
Oh my gosh, I've got so many. That's so mean. So mean. Oh, I have to come back to you on that one.
Okay,
Let me think
cool.
about a funny one.
All right, no worries. If you could choose five inspirational people to have dinner with, they could be dead or alive, who would they be?
Okay. Five inspirational people. Politicians, Barack Obama, I'd love to understand what makes him tick. Julia Gillard, I think she presided over a really difficult little reign there. I wish I could ask my nan a lot more things. She was very wise, so it'd
Beautiful.
be ace to have time with her again. I reckon I'd be busy with those three, to be honest.
Great conversation, that would be. Great conversation. If you were Prime Minister for the day, what's one thing that you would change?
I can't say land tax, can I?
Oh, you can say whatever you want.
What's one thing I would change? I'd have a crack at the things that require bipartisanship. So I'd schedule a meeting with the leader of the opposition and say, how can we tackle some of these things in a much better way?
Oh, I like that. That's so cool. Coming back to the most embarrassing moment before we get into the last question.
Yeah, when I was a little kid and I was very shy, we had this play that we had to do on stage, and I was scheduled to be the lead character who was a man. And I don't know whether my teacher hated me and wanted to pay out of me or just wanted to see me be brave. And so I had this schedule of things I had to wear for this play, and my mum was a busy working mum. She couldn't go, but she's like, yep, here you go. Anyway, I was meant to have black tights and she bought me black stockings and they were really thin. And so I'm brave Sir Rod this night on stage holding up my sword and I've got undies with flowers on them and like the boys teased me for a million years. I was
My
mortified. I
goodness.
reckon I was
Oh
about
man.
eight or nine. Stuff that
Oh,
scars you.
yep. Oh dear me. All right, last one. Best piece of advice.
I want to make this about property because it's what I'm all about. The earlier you start, the bigger returns you'll have in life, and you don't need a 10 out of 10 property. A 9 out of 10 property will still give you great returns, and I'm certainly not saying compromise on your acquisition, but get started earlier. Don't think that you need to spend $1.5 million to have a decent asset. It's not the case. Start early and let compounding growth do its thing.
Yeah, I love that. Great piece of advice. And what's coming up for you for this year? Any exciting projects that you're working on?
Yeah, always. I'm writing a book with Pete Wargent. So he's a good buddy of mine and we look at property, in similar ways and we approach it in different ways. And we've done this she said, he said kind of book. And it's with the editors now and that's due for release, I think, around June, all things going well.
So exciting. So make sure you keep an eye look out for that one. How can the audience follow you, get in touch with you, ask more questions?
They can contact me via my website. There's an easy little button there, contact Kate. So it's katebakos.com.au, and I'm Kate with a C. Or they can jump on the Property Trio. And we've enjoyed quite a few years with Pete Kalizos, and recently Michael Mortlock's joined the fold now that Pete's semi-retired. So, yeah, the three of us have a lot of fun and we'll always answer questions.
Love it. Kate, really appreciate your time, energy, and expertise. And thank you so much for being on the show today.
Well, it's great to be a part of it, James. Thanks for asking me.